and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus and community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Coquitlam, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I'm Robin. I am your host for today, and we've got a really exciting program coming up. I have a guest that I'll be talking to who is here with the Fringe, but I will leave that introduction for just a moment. We're going to hear a song first to start the program and just sort of settle us in. But I will say that coming up on the program, just in case you want to, you know, settle yourself in, there will be some talk of sexual violence, sexual assault and rape. So all of those might be trigger warnings for you. I just want to give you an advance heads up. And with that, here is our song, and I'll be back with the introduction to our guest. And welcome back to Intravenous. as I was saying before we heard the song there, my guest is Marika Freund. And
Hi.
she is an actor, writer, choreographer, comedian who's currently living in Tel Aviv with her Israeli-Canadian husband. As an artist, she does her best to confront real-life issues in a way that is both relatable and digestible, using her crafts, plural, to try to help move the needle towards creating a better world for all of us, even if it's just a millimeter within whatever time she has left on this planet. Marika is the creator of Peaches, a series of essays, a podcast, and a play that had its world premiere here at the Vancouver Fringe Festival just less than a month ago. And it was a runner-up for Best of the Fest. All of these projects are about things that she's learned about rape culture while navigating the Canadian legal system. Her goal is expanding and destigmatizing conversations around sexual violence to create more safety for more women. She also founded, or was one of the founding members of My Choice, nope, My Voice,
My voice, my choice. Yeah.
which has an end goal of amending the Canadian Criminal Code, Section 486.
486.4.
Four, so
Yeah.
that unwanted publication bans no longer force silence upon victim complainants. Holy smokes, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I know it's a bit of a mouthful with the criminal code. Political language is not always accessible. So I'm really grateful that I found this group of really incredible humans, and they're actually currently, I'll talk about this a little bit later, but they're in Ottawa right now, working towards pushing Bill S-12 through. So it's a very exciting time. And so my fingers are crossed, and I'm there in spirit with them.
Cool. Yeah. And as you said, we'll get to touch on that a little bit in the in our conversation. Do you want to say a couple of words about the song that we heard just to kick the show off?
So I Am Woman by Helen Reddy. I love it. I love her. It just feels like such an anthem, and it really feels like it's aged beautifully, but also unfortunately has aged beautifully. I really feel like every generation who's walking this planet right now can really relate to the lyrics of her song, and I just find it so empowering. So it's on my pre-show playlist, so the audience would hear it when they would come in. And one of my things that I like to do to pump myself up before I go on stage is I like to just lip sync backstage to the songs that are on, and that's one of them. So it's it was one of my power songs to get ready for the performance.
That's so fun. All right. So this conversation is gigantic to me. It feels like, and I'm not exactly sure where to start. And
Oh my gosh, I don't even know where to start. So, yeah.
yeah. So the best place is sort of at the beginning or the beginning-ish. So, as you are comfortable, can you share your experience of what birthed Peaches and what the project and the projects stand for, in your own words?
Yeah, absolutely. And I like the way you say what birthed Peaches. So I'll talk about the birth of Peaches, because Peaches is actually a character. And Peaches, he first showed up for me in a television pilot that I wrote called Historical Fiction, that is about my experience coming forward. And Peaches is my shadow self, and Peaches is also played by a puppet, just like in the play. And the whole project, or I mean, I guess I could call it at this point, the Peaches universe is wholly about healing. And most specifically, what it really means to heal from trauma and how not to be trapped in the present by things that happened in the past. And very quickly, after a couple of pretty intimate table reads of the pilot, Peaches became everybody's favorite character. Everybody just loved Peaches. And I think that there's something very freeing in having a puppet kind of be the jerk or to be the one to carry the character traits that aren't traditionally pretty. I found that having Peaches or just that part of myself be personified by a puppet, it really allowed all of the ugly stuff that, you know, we humans especially don't love confronting. It allowed it to live outside of myself or outside of like a human world in a way that felt a lot more safe. And it promoted a lot more laughter. Laughter and play for me are really important ingredients in healing, in the work that I'm doing, especially. I really feel like laughter and play is the WD-40 that helps to get sticky stuff unstuck. It's a safe entryway into the conversation, and I find that it makes it a lot more accessible. And my big hope is that people will want to approach the subject matter versus running away from it. So All Things Peaches, it actually is leading towards the television show I'm working on getting picked up. But the podcast and the play exist as a way for me to build trust with my audience. So it's a very ambitious project. So that's how Peaches was birthed.
I love that. And a lot resonates. I do think that we're a lot more open to ideas when we can find humor and sort of lightness or laughter within the things that feel so heavy in our world.
And for me, it's not like, I would like to clarify, it's not that, you know, the subject of rape culture is funny. It's not.
No.
It's not funny at all, but there are things around it that can be funny. And finding things on the periphery that you can laugh at allows a safe entryway into the ugly subject matter. And it was really like, when I did the play, it felt like a big social experiment. I was actually really calling it a social experiment because I didn't know if it was possible to do this. I love comedy. I sometimes love making inappropriate jokes. It's just, it's me. It's, you know, instead of running away from it, I decided to try and embrace it. Starting with a joke and then going into something that was a bit more heavy, I think helped the audience stay with me through to the very end. I'm so thrilled with how it was received. I couldn't have even predicted this runner-up award. So I'm so grateful that people on Granville Island were starting to talk about the play. And it wasn't so much that I was excited they were talking about the play, it's that they were talking about the subject matter. So there was something there that was working, which it just makes me so excited. So, yeah.
As you mentioned, Peaches, in all of its iterations, addresses rape culture. How do you define rape culture, and how has that definition shifted with your learning process?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I want to start with a standardized definition. I think that having your own personal relationship with what rape culture means is really important for everybody's personal healing. But I like to always have one
sort of kernel of truth that we go back to, or like one source of truth. And so in chapter one of the podcast, it's called The Handbook. I use the Oxford Dictionary, their definition, and the Oxford Dictionary defines rape culture as a society or environment whose prevailing social attitudes have the effect of normalizing or trivializing sexual assault and abuse. And that definition to me, after embarking on this project with Peaches, especially over the past 2 years since it's been launched into the world and growing, I still find it very accurate, but it's actually my relationship to why we normalize and trivialize sexual assault and abuse that has shifted for me. And, you know, this is a really scary subject matter to tackle, and everyone on the planet has a very deep relationship to rape culture and how they choose to approach it. But through my own learning process, I did learn that there is collectively a lot of fear around it. And I have this hypothesis that because of this, like, this fear is based on a fear of being bad or being seen as being bad. And so this hypothesis, my hypothesis is that it gets trivialized and normalized because no one wants to have to admit that they do or once did love and care for a rapist or somebody who committed a crime or did the sexual abuse. Nobody wants to be connected to somebody who has done something like that. And the thing is that is really challenging to realize is, this is really tricky water that I'm treading here right now, but rapists or anyone who commits a crime like that largely aren't wholly bad. They have qualities that are lovable and they are loved. They're people's friends, they're people's family, they're celebrities that people have idolized for a really long time. Human beings are just multidimensional. I mean, some people really are just sociopaths, but that's usually a very small minority. I think there's just so many true crime podcasts about them. It feels like there's way more of them than there actually are. But generally, humans are multidimensional, and there's a very good chance that each and every single one of us has loved and cared for somebody who has committed a sexual crime. And I think it needs to be safe for people who do love and care for those people to be allowed to love and care for those people. But I think that there is an expectation that once it's out in the open that this person has committed a rape or a sexual offense, that they get dropped like a hot potato. And let's say that this person who's committed a rape is your son or your nephew or like your husband or someone who's close. Having to admit that you loved or love that person and still care for them even after knowing that, it kind of means that you have to admit that you're bad or that you might be bad.
Or complicit, and I think, somehow, right?
Yeah. Even if you have no... And so it's... And I think that because of this shared cultural belief that somebody who commits a crime is undeserving of love after it comes to the light, we end up treating victims like garbage in order to protect ourselves from being labeled as bad for caring about someone who has committed a heinous crime. And so I think that a lot of rape culture gets condoned because everybody's attached to it. And I don't think anybody wants to be attached to it because right now it's bad. It just is bad in general to be attached to it. But socially speaking, it's just so bad to be attached to it. And so whistleblowers especially have both the worst and most essential role to play in the dismantling of rape culture, because it is the whistleblowers who force people to acknowledge that love is just a very complex and complicated thing. Because oftentimes, too, the people who abuse us are people who are close to us. And this is actually something I do tackle in the play. You know, it's, you know, what do you do with these complicated feelings where you feel empathy for somebody because you recognize that they're sick, but you also need to recognize that you were violated. And why in the play, the character that I play was forced into the fringes of society for speaking up. And her acting coach asked her to find three similarities between her and her abuser in order to find deep empathy for him to be able to get into the character she was auditioning for. And so it's just so tough and complicated. And I think it just needs to be okay to admit that even though these horrible crimes are happening, like it, I don't think people really want to deny other humans of love, but I don't think we're at a point yet where, as a society, it's safe to say like, hey, like my son did this. I don't condone it, but I still love him with my whole heart. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. Yeah. And it just makes me think of what a precipice kind of we're on, and that it's a double-edged sword in a way, because, you know, cancel culture is so rampant and prevalent, and we just want to eliminate the things that don't fall within what we like or what we agree with, or, you know, what our political this or that is. And that the more that sort of takes hold in society, the more dangerous and the more isolated these incidences where, you know, you don't want to be canceled out because of your affiliation or your compassion for someone or whatever that relationality is, which is a human thing. You know, like we're all connected in ways that are, you know, supportive, unsupportive, interdependent, codependent, all the things.
Yeah. So I guess to just summarize it, like after what you said, it's cancel culture has made us too afraid to actually be wholly loving people. And, you know, we're not in a place yet where we can hold the people we love accountable, and honor the victim at the same time. It's really like a pendulum that keeps swinging back and forth. So yeah, it's tough, but yeah, a lot of my work with Peaches really kind of straddles that area where it's like where, because for me, it's like, I want to find a solution. Like this world isn't, we don't live in a fair world. We don't live in a fair world at all.
No.
And, somebody needs to find the grace in this. And I think, unfortunately, after all of my lived experience, I think it does fall on the victim. I think, you know, we have been saying don't put too much on the victim, which I completely agree with. But unfortunately, if it keeps going back and forth, like somebody just has to stop the cycle. Mm-hmm. And I think for me anyway, I'm choosing to be somebody who's trying to approach the situation with as much grace as possible while still honoring my own experience. Just because I want it so badly for it to be safe for people to talk about it. Cause I feel like the reason it's not moving forward is because people haven't been talking about it and haven't been allowed to talk about it. So.
Yeah. Silence and isolation is not going to get us to the end goal of having it be a safer world.
Yeah.
And without talking about it, we can't have that level of accountability that you'd mentioned, you know, that we need in all of this. So yeah, so complicated. So complicated. Yeah.
It's really, and I think that I think it's really important to have different voices in the space, saying different things and providing different perspectives, because it's still a very new conversation.
So. Yeah, and everybody brings a different level of experience of, you know, sexual violence or sexualized violence can and does mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And so, you know, when we think about it, you know, in a very specific or through a very specific lens, it doesn't incorporate what the totality of what that it actually encompasses for the population. So we do need that conversation to include everybody, really.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about a cultural phenomenon, you know, because culture it does include everyone.
Yeah. It's a very inclusive thing. And nobody's left out of this conversation. You know, I've encountered people along the way who are just like, oh, well, I've never raped or been raped. So it's like, it's not my conversation, but it is, because it's, even if you know somebody who's been through this or has done the horrible thing, you're attached and you're associated. And for me personally, the most traumatic stuff that happened was everything surrounding the happening, everything that happened afterwards, like who decided to show up for me, who disappeared. It was more traumatic after saying something and losing everybody, because it was loud. It was really loud. But, the person who, you know, made the night happen, I don't know what else to say, but who did the thing, he was really beloved in our community. And it wasn't until more women started telling the same story that people started taking it seriously. And I don't think at the time anybody wanted to admit they, at that house party, allowed what happened to happen. So it's easier to not have any attachment to it, to avoid being in a position of being seen as being bad.
Mm-hmm. You've talked a bit about, you know, the lofty goals that you have for the project. Yeah. And specifically in your first Peaches essay, you state your goals for the project are to make information more accessible, to stop feeling like a loser yourself, and to help people feel safe trying to help. These probably have essay-long answers in and of themselves, but do you want to elaborate on what those goals would be and perhaps what the utopian or the ideal would be in your mind?
Ooh, that's a juicy question. I like it. I think because we've talked a little bit about safety and accessibility stuff already a tiny bit, I think I'm going to tackle the loser part. Yeah, the loser part. So when I started the podcast and I started writing it, because every single podcast episode is actually very thoughtfully written out, I had major writer's block. And in the beginning, I felt like everything I was writing while, I guess, avoiding my own inner peaches, if you will, it felt really contrived. And it felt like I was just pumping out garbage, just things that people were already saying, things that were, you know, being hashtagged on social media, things that I knew were already socially safe to talk about. And I wasn't proud of anything that I was writing about. And I sat with myself for a bit and was like, well, how do you actually feel? And what do you want to accomplish? And when I got really honest with myself, I was like, well, I feel like a loser. And I want to finally let people know what I was going through so that they can know that I wasn't actually just like a solitary loser for those 7 years. And it's, you know, it's not a sexy or empowering way to feel, but it was really real. And it was really interesting when I started leaning into it, and when people would listen to the first episode of the podcast, you wouldn't believe how many people reached out to me just to tell me that I wasn't a loser and that I was strong and that I was brave and fierce and incredible. And they really made a point of making sure that I knew I wasn't a loser. And it was really sweet and really wonderful. But I don't think people get that. I'm not ashamed of the fact that I felt like a loser anymore. None of that scares me anymore. Before, it scared me. I didn't want people to know that I felt that small, but I did. And I think it was really important for me to share that part, because it also would have been my bypassing a very important step in my healing process. If I just jumped straight to I'm an empowered person without actually facing that part of me that felt like a small loser, and I was avoiding it, then those feelings of being a loser would have, they would have come to find me later for sure. And everything I have been building, like, wouldn't be built on a strong foundation. Yeah, it's, I think it feels very empowering to be able to say that I felt like a loser. But I think it's hard for people to hear that, because I think it triggers these, like, am I a bad person for letting this person who is going through so much feel like a loser? So I think it kind of is kind of like a, I don't have words for it, but it all sort of stems together around this fear of being bad and hearing the ugly parts, because it reminds us that we're all kind of collectively responsible for helping to eradicate rape culture.
Being with folks who are feeling like a loser, hurting, lonely, sad, depressed, anxious, you know, pick any of the things that, you know, make us feel icky on the inside, and pull away, and want to isolate ourselves, we're not taught how to do that.
No.
You know, we're not taught how to do that for ourselves, and we're certainly not taught how to sit with others while they're in that state and just sort of bear witness to the pain that as human beings we come up against, you know? This idea of, you know, how do I do it? And if I do it, you know, I don't want to do it wrong, and I don't want to engage with this sort of quote unquote bad feeling. And, you know, like, you just want to shove it under the rug and, you know,
get it away from you as far as,
dust it off and, you know, put on the happy face and go. Because hard feelings are hard for,
they're awful.
Not only the person who's feeling them, but also the people who love and care about you and want you to feel better.
Yeah.
Ultimately, right? It's hard to be with your loved people when they feel rough.
Yeah, and you don't want people to feel that way. Not at all. It is hard to watch and bear witness to, but it is just such a real part of the human experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what a beautiful and lofty goal that is to, you know, have us strive for being able to hold that space for one another, so that, you know, we can live a more fully human existence of feeling all the feels and not just show socially the happy feels and take home the icky feels and be all isolated and alone with them.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I'm loving how it's being received so far. I don't think I'm the only one who wants to be like, yeah, I felt like a loser. That was it. You know, I think people are starting to be like, oh, finally. Yeah, me too. So it's
right. And then you can have a shared laugh together about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is ultimately to me so much more healing. Like, oh, didn't that suck? Like, yeah, it did. It totally sucked. Like, there was nothing good about it at all. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a good time to take a little song break again. And then we're going to come back and chat a little bit more about your advocacy organization and what's happening with the criminal code stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So my guest is Marika Freund. And what song have you got for us?
Oh, Firework by Katy Perry. So if you're feeling any of those loser feels, just listen to her voice and I'll be lip syncing along because this is another one of the songs from my pre-show track.
Fantastic. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Intravenous. hate to bring you back from the dancing, perhaps, that that
all
you're
the,
doing.
All the good vibes that Katy Perry gives. Yeah, totally.
But I have Marika Freund, who is with me on Zoom today, and we've been talking about her project Peaches, which is a multi-dimensional arts-based project, and I want to leap a little bit and talk about My Voice, My Choice, which is an advocacy organization that you co-founded to essentially lobby for changes to the criminal code section 486.4. And that probably doesn't mean anything to anybody, but I'll get you to say what the law is now and what needs to be amended there. And how would you like to see the law replaced?
Yeah. Okay. So I guess, where do I start? So I, among many other people, had an unwanted publication ban placed on my name after I came forward. And a group of us, actually led by an incredible woman named Morrell Andrews, created My Voice, My Choice, which is an initiative created by Canadian victim complainants for Canadian victim complainants to amend Criminal Code Section 486.4 so that no person is ever forced into silence due to an unwanted publication ban. Now, a publication ban is an order the court makes that prevents anyone from publishing, broadcasting, or transmitting any information that could identify a victim complainant or witness who participates in the criminal justice system. The publication ban is intended to allow victims, complainants, or witnesses to participate in the justice system without suffering the negative consequences of being publicly identified. And this type of publication ban is not meant to protect the identity of the accused or the offender. And in 1988, the Supreme Court of Canada held that the purpose of publication bans in sexual offenses was to encourage the reporting of these crimes by protecting complainants from the trauma of unwanted and widespread publications. And these orders are currently made under Section 486.4 of the Criminal Code. So currently, the law does not oblige the court or prosecutor to inform a victim complainant that a ban has been placed on their identity. So that results in many people being unaware that a ban is in place or of the legal repercussions and the penalties for breaching it. And every person who fails to comply with a Section 486.4 publication ban is guilty of an offense punishable on summary conviction. And so this includes the victim complainant. And so this means that the person who comes forward can face a fine of up to $5,000 and or a term of imprisonment of up to 2 years less a day for telling their own story. So I guess just to put this into context, when I started writing historical fiction, there was still a publication ban on my name that I was unaware of. And every time I did a table reading or submitted the pilot to a network, I was breaching my publication ban. And every time I emailed that script to anybody or had people reading it around a table, I was setting myself up to be criminally charged and or fined for trying to encourage healing through the telling of my story. The other thing that is really important to note about this is that it is also currently incredibly challenging to lift an unwanted publication ban. And often the victim complainant is abandoned by the prosecutor, often, or the Crown attorney, who has put it in place once the proceedings are over. And this was actually my experience in the legal system. And so this reality forces the victim complainant to either navigate the legal system alone or to hire a lawyer and incur exorbitant expenses to ask for their right to speak. So just again, for clarity and context, everything that I'm doing with Peaches was a federal crime up until October 5th, 2021. So tomorrow's actually my 2-year anniversary of having my voice back, which is it's a pretty big deal.
That is a big deal.
Thank you. I had to get the help of 2 different lawyers that I hired and paid for out of pocket to fix a huge mistake that was made by my Crown attorney. But I guess in terms of the legal system, with how things are run right now, it wasn't technically a mistake because they were just doing what they were just, you know, status quo. So the work with My Voice, My Choice has been trying to accomplish is to, one, allow victim complainants to attribute their own experience of sexual offenses without being charged. Grant adult victim complainants of sexual offenses a choice in the application of a 486.4 publication ban. Produce comprehensive, accessible, multilingual, and public information about 486.4 publication bans on government websites. You wouldn't believe how hard it was to get information. I jokingly used to call some of these women that I'm working with now the black market for feminism. Actually, not everybody identifies as a woman. So this team of incredible humans. But yeah, it felt like the black market for feminism to me anyway. We want to simplify the process to lift a ban at any time before, during, or after court proceedings without the services of a lawyer. And finally, to allow victim complainants to opt out of a 486.4 ban on the victim impact statement form. So basically, we just want to make sure that people who come forward and have the right to tell their stories without being
penalized.
So it shouldn't be a crime to tell the story about how you tried to stop more crimes from happening, essentially, you know. It's not funny, but it is like, it's so insane to me that it has to be funny. And so at the moment, some of the team members from My Voice, My Choice are in Ottawa. I really have to give them all the credit. My contribution, because I'm so far away now physically, is I built the website. My big thing was I wanted to help make the information accessible. And so that was my contribution. But we've got a team of really incredible people who are in the House of Commons currently helping to move Bill S-12 along. And Bill S-12 includes the amendments to Section 486.4 of the Criminal Code. These humans are actually traveling from all across Canada right now. And there's a GoFundMe set up to help their travel expenses, hotels, food, administrative costs. So if you have the means to help support them, please, please, please go to myvoicemychoice.org. You can follow along with the status of the amendment of 486.4, and you can help these incredible humans because they're doing everything out of pocket to help make this happen. They're so brilliant, and they deserve all the support.
And it's something that helps all people in a situation like this be able to have a voice and the autonomy over their own experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Because some people may want it private for years and years and years, and then all of a sudden decide 10 years later that they do want to talk about it. So there needs to be a way for them to lift it. And there needs to be procedure for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will post links also in the audio for.
Oh, this, thank you.
For this show goes up in our program archives, so that folks can just follow the link and find information about your project Peaches, but also about My Voice, My Choice. So
thank you. That means so much.
Make it easy for listeners. Just with the short amount of time that we have left, I want to get your opinion on what you think the collective barriers are that need to be dismantled for us as a society to reach a more utopian vision. And maybe that's lofty of me to think that we can address that in just the very few minutes that we have left, but.
I guess when I talk about, I do want to address really quickly for the listeners, I'm a cisgender white woman who is currently in a heteronormative relationship. So even though I have been through hell and back, I was dripping with privilege in the Canadian legal system. And I'm answering this question from that point of view. So I know that there's a lot that I'm missing in this. But from my perspective and from my personal lived experience, I think we need to stop expecting to have perfect solutions immediately. And we need to be really happy taking baby steps towards this, you know, more utopian vision. Like as I was saying over and over again, there's just so much fear around the subject matter. So we really need to be ready to... we really need to be able to celebrate the small wins. I do think that there are a lot of deeply seated cultural beliefs that are also entrenched in unconscious religious and spiritual biases about sex that need to be unlearned. And those also take time to get unhinged. You need a lot of whatever the healing equivalent, well, I say it's laughter and play for the WD-40 to kind of get that stuff unstuck. You know, these beliefs aren't just, they don't just belong to identifying men. Identifying women also can participate in the oppressive, non-inclusive belief systems that, you know, stigmatize people around. I don't know how else to say it, but that sort of insane idea that, you know, virgins are pure and that's the only way a woman is acceptable. I mean, it's insane. I think it's insane. There might be somebody listening who's like, no, that's completely rational. But, but we just need to keep talking. We just need to keep talking. I think sometimes people need to hear themselves say oppressive things out loud. I think they need to hear it come out of their own mouths sometimes too. I think if you have it bottled up inside for so long and you rationalize it internally, and then when it comes out, you're like, oh wait, that sounds not right. So I think we need to give people the space to have verbal diarrhea, because again, this conversation is so new. Yeah, and I just keep talking and just keep talking. I mean, as somebody who wasn't allowed to talk about it, just please keep talking. Talking is great. So.
Yeah, important words, I think, there, Marika. Thank you so much for talking to me today about
Thank you so much for having me.
Bringing your... bringing a little bit of your process with Peaches to us, and you're sharing your experience and what your goals are with this whole business. I wish you the best of luck with it all. I agree. We just need to talk about it more. We need to have more openness. We need to have change and safety and accountability and all of the good things, more interdependence.
Absolutely.
That's all the time that we have. Of course, stay tuned. Democracy Now! Is coming right up. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Marika.
Thank you.
The Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty, who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SVSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email at sv-support@sfu.ca. That was sv-support@sfu.ca.